Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Jennifer and Adriana Wicks were last seen on March 25th, 2004, at the Benton residence, Jennifer's boyfriend's family's house in Springfield, Tennessee. On that day, Jennifer's father, Michael Wicks, spoke with Jennifer on the phone, making him the last relative to have contact with her. Joey, Jennifer's boyfriend at the time, and his parents are allegedly the last known individuals to have seen Jennifer and Adriana. Since March 2004, there have been no confirmed sightings of Jennifer or her daughter since they were last seen at the Benton residence. This has been a heart-wrenching journey for Jennifer's family, who have been tirelessly searching for answers. Over the years, many people have come forward with information that has led to Jennifer's family to believe that foul play was involved. The behavior of the last people to have seen Jennifer and her daughter also raised suspicions. Casey, Jennifer's sister, has pieced together in great deal all of the relevant information surrounding her sister and niece's disappearance, a task that has taken a toll on her emotionally. In this second part, the interview with Casey continues from where it left off in part one. Casey discusses how her family became worried after not hearing from Jennifer and began suspecting something was wrong. In part two, she talks about the panic that ensued when it became clear that something had happened to her sister and niece. She also shares details about their last known whereabouts and movements. There is a $25,000 reward for new information in this case. Call the Robertson County Sheriff's Department at 615-384-7981 if you know anything. Also, please follow Justice for Jennifer and Adriana Wicks on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram, which I have linked in the show notes. There's also a GoFundMe you can donate to help with the investigation and a petition you can sign which supports the search of the Benton property. Your support and involvement are crucial in our efforts to find Jennifer and Adriana.
I don't know what prompted that phone call. My mom and I talk about that often. I don't know what prompted that phone call. Like, did she speak to the Benton family? Because they actually did communicate with the Benton family and get along, as well as my aunt communicated with the Benton family and got along with them as well. I don't know what made her call my mom and say, Jennifer's missing. But at that time, of course, my mom starts to panic, starts calling everyone, starts calling Joey, his cell phone, starts calling the Benton home phone, no answer all night. Everyone is blowing up their phone. They're not answering. No family members, no friends of Jennifer have heard from her. Everyone starts gathering at my house. And this is like when people ask me, like, what do you remember of that time? Like, this is the moment in time that I remember and that I've kind of been stuck in for 20 years, that my family's been stuck in for 20 years, because that's how it feels. It's just a panic of not being able to find Jennifer and Adriana for 20 years. And so everyone starts showing up at our house, driving around, because Cross Plains is where we live. Springfield is where Jennifer and Adriana were staying with the Benton family. And they lived kind of like almost into Cross Plains, like going towards the interstate. And we lived in Cross Plains, which is a very small town, one blinking red light, one grocery store, that sort of town, where everyone knows everybody. And so we're driving around. My other sister and my mom are driving to friends' houses or like the stores in town, you know, just looking for her. Can't find her. Finally, my sister Heather gets Joey to answer his phone. He answers his cell phone, and my sister's like, "Where is Jennifer? No one can get in touch with her. Y'all haven't been answering your phone. Like, where is she?" He says, "I don't know where she is. We broke up." And that's the extent that she remembers from that phone conversation. But that night, Joey and his friends were at a bonfire that had already been scheduled at this party barn. Joe, his dad, calls my aunt and leaves a message on her voicemail on her answering machine and says that he heard that Jennifer was there earlier that day looking for her income tax refund check. She had had a very small income tax refund for around $500, where she worked a job in 2003 for a little bit and was waiting on that money, and it was supposed to come in I think on the 26th, which was Friday. And so she had come to get that money. And according to Joey, because I definitely need to cover that. And he said, "I heard she was looking for it, so I'm just calling to find her to give it to her." And so my aunt gets that voice message and calls him back and says, "No one can find Jennifer. Where is she?" And this is whenever Joey starts to tell his story of what happened. And he says, "We broke up and I drove her to the gas station like she asked me to, and I haven't heard from her." So Joey's dad and Joey drive over to my aunt's house and tell their account of what happened that night. Excuse me. So I'm going to back up a little bit to Thursday because I want to cover Joey's story of what happened. So everything after that phone call with Jennifer's dad and possibly my aunt at 1 o'clock, everything's hearsay. So Joey says on Thursday, or he tells my mom. So this is after the girl's disappearance and my mom's able to get face to face with him. And I am recanting her notes. And my mom kept very detailed journals of all of the things she did, who she spoke with. And so I am getting this information from a journal entry of a conversation she had with Joey after the girls disappeared. And Joey says that whenever he got home from work on Thursday, doesn't mention the emergency or anything like that, or coming home early. We hear that after the fact from the foreman on the job and my cousin telling us what happened that day. But he says he got home from work that day and that Jennifer and Adriana were locked in their room. And some people are, you know, they take that to the extent that they were locked in their bedroom, like someone had locked them in. But to me, it sounded like the night when she had called my mom and like had locked the door from the inside, but they were locked in their room. And he says that they decided to go for a drive to talk about everything. So they go on a drive, and I don't know to where, I don't know for how long, I don't know what car they drove, but again, his truck was in the shop and they had this Ford Explorer. So I assume it was that. And they go on this drive, and while they're on this drive, they decide to break up, he says, which kind of makes it sound like it's like a very amicable breakup, you know, like they just decide together to break up. And they drive back to his parents' house, and he says that my sister refuses to go back in to the house. She doesn't want to live there anymore. She wants to live back in the barn, the party barn, the shed with him. And not be under their roof with them. And so she refuses to go in, and she just says to him, "Take me to the gas station." And he says, "Okay." And he drives them from Springfield into Cross Plains down that one blinking red light town road. And they stop at the grocery store in town, which my boyfriend's family owned, by the way, at the time. So, you know, as far as who worked there and who was there and all of that, like, we have all of that knowledge. And he says they stopped at the grocery store. It was around 9 o'clock on Thursday evening. And he says that Jennifer went into the store. I don't know if she took Adriana with her or not, but he says she went into the store, he assumes, to make a phone call. And there were three employees working that night at the grocery. There was the manager on duty. He was an old, heavyset African-American male who had worked there for years and years and years. Everyone knew him. And he sat behind the counter of, like, their admin area, and the phone was back there. And so if she were to use the phone, he said that she would have had to ask him, and he would have set it up on the counter because it was kind of like his desk was lower below kind of like the area where someone would talk to him. And he said she didn't come in here to use the phone. The other two employees that night were a cashier and a bagger who were right up front, right in front of the door. Neither one of them saw Jennifer or Adriana that night. So Joey says she came back out and they drove to the gas station. On the way from his house to the grocery store is my aunt's house, where if she had that conversation with her, said she left her a key if she needed to come, which was already a plan if Jennifer needed it. So they drove right past her house, like literally past her driveway. And then from the grocery store to the gas station is the same road. And that is the road that my house at the time sat on, literally drives past our driveway. So he says he took her to the gas station. This is exit 112 off I-65 North going toward Kentucky, the Cross Plains and Springfield exit. And there, if you're going into Cross Plains off the interstate, it's the first little gas station on the right. It's now just an empty parking lot. It's no longer there, but at the time it was an Exxon station. There were only three gas stations at that time. There was one just a little bit further down that's still there, and then there was this one, and there was one across the interstate. And it was this little Exxon station on the left before you get to the interstate. And he says he pulled up at the Exxon and dropped Jennifer and Adriana out without any of their belongings, and that he drove across the street to a church parking lot. The parking lot's not directly facing the gas station either. It's kind of like perpendicular. So if he parked there, you know, he would be looking out his driver window across the street. But he says he parked there and waited for about 10 minutes, and a car pulls up. Jennifer and Adriana get into this car and drive away. And he doesn't see which way they went. He doesn't see who was in the car. Doesn't remember if it was actually a four-door car or a two-door. Just says that he remembers them getting into the back of the car, so he assumes that it was a four-door car, a white four-door car. He then says he went home after that, and the next day on Friday that he went to work that morning, but they finished their job early on the site, so they all got to go home early. So he got home mid-morning and was kind of like relaxing in the living room on the couch, and says that Jennifer pulled up to the house alone, driving the same white car. Again, he cannot identify the car. He doesn't know what make and model. He just knows that it's the same car somehow. Adriana is not with Jennifer, but she comes in and says, I'm looking for my income tax refund that's supposed to come in today. He says, my parents are not home to give it to you. You'll have to come back later. He says that she grabs a couple things, a change of clothes, and then leaves and says, okay, I'll come back tomorrow to get it. And then that's the last time he hears from, sees, talks to Jennifer there at his home. So that was his story. And we're on Friday night, whenever he's having this bonfire, and his dad leaves this voicemail message trying to find Jennifer to give her her income tax refund, which I've always found very strange, because she told Joey that she would come back and get it. So why are you calling around and dodging everyone's phone calls when we've been trying to blow your phone up all night? And then you call my aunt and say, I've got her income tax refund, even though your son said that she would be back to get it the next day. Always found that kind of strange. But anyway, they show up at my aunt's house on Friday evening when we're all driving around looking for her and freaking out. And they give their story of what happened about the breakup and the car. And whenever he says, he tells my aunt, like, she must have had a friend pick her up. You know, she arranged for a friend to pick her up. It was a white car. My aunt is like, oh, well, it must be these other people, Jerry and Helga. They're the only friends I know that have a white car that she had been associated with recently. And Joey's like, yeah, probably, you know. So at the bonfire that night, before he came over to my aunt's house, he told my cousin Jeffrey that she was supposed to be there. It was a couple's thing. They were hanging out as couples. It was Joey and Jennifer, my cousin Jeffrey and his girlfriend, and another couple. And so my cousin's like, where's Jennifer? And Joey says, she's at a friend's house, to my cousin. So at this point in time, he's telling my cousin she's at a friend's house, and then goes to my aunt's house and says, we broke up. I dropped her off at the gas station. Maybe he's assuming she's at a friend's house. I don't know why he told two different things. But that's how the night kind of ended for them and their part of the story. And then, of course, into the wee hours of the morning, we're calling everyone. No one can find Jennifer. We decide to call the cops. And the cops come over to our house, and we tell them what's happening. They say, okay, we're going to go over there. And they go over to Joey's house. His parents are not home. And they get his original statement from him, which in that original statement, he says that the car that he gives the same story about the gas station, and he says that the car that picked him up is a white four-door Camaro or Mustang, which doesn't exist, but that's written in the original police report. And he also originally says he can't remember. He tells the officer at first, like, he dropped her at a friend's house. And then he's like, no, that's not right. I dropped her at the gas station. And then the officer asked, like, what gas station? And he says, I don't remember which one. It's an Exxon. And the officer's like, which Exxon? And he's like, I don't know. And then he's like, okay, I remember it's this one. So they're in the police report, like, if you read it, like, it goes kind of back and forth like that, where he can't remember, and then he remembers, and then he can't. So the officer says, well, we need to come in. You know, we're kind of concerned about their well-being. We need to do a welfare check. He says, well, my parents aren't home. You know, if you want to come in, you need to come back with a warrant. And so the officer leaves, reports it to his superior, and they come to our house and tell my mom, like, something's not right. Like, he won't let us come in. He's got conflicting stories. Something's not right. And so they, at that point in time, call in to their superiors, and they create the BOLO, to be on the lookout for Jennifer and Adriana, because at this point, all they're going off of is that Jennifer and Adriana left in this black car. So they're, I don't want to say they're believing his story at this point, but that's all they have to go off of, other than his conflicting stories being sketchy. And so they put on this be on the lookout, like someone's going to find Jennifer, Adriana, out walking around somewhere. Of course, all of us, Jennifer's family, are all like, she wouldn't do that. She would not just be out somewhere. And we've contacted everyone that knows her, like, something's wrong, you know. And so we're over here panicking, and they're over here not issuing an Amber Alert, because that was a thing at the time. Of course, Adriana is with her mother, which, if anyone knows anything about little Noah, that, you know, there was like a custody kidnapping that happened. Like, they put Noah's law in place. That wasn't in place then, so we couldn't get an Amber Alert issued. When they called into the sheriff's department, the detectives that were working that weekend, they said, put it on our desk. We'll be in on Monday. And, like, that's just how it was kind of handled then. They were like, oh, she'll be back. You know, kind of like a runaway is how the case was treated. And on Sunday, they did go to the Benton residence, and the Benton gave permission to do a walkthrough. Mind you, this is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 3 days later at this point. And so do with that what you will, but is that enough time to cover anything up if they are responsible? I don't know. I just know the show 48 hours and whatever. We're 3 days later, 3 days too late. And they do a walkthrough of the house looking for, this is a permissible walkthrough. This is not with a warrant. We've never been able to get a warrant for our case, even though they were last seen and placed there at the Benton residence. And so they did a walkthrough just looking for things out of place, or I guess blood, or a table turned over, you know, things like that, like evidence of foul play. And there was nothing. I believe the next day on Monday, they brought a scent dog out, which I can only compare to Little Summer Wells in East Tennessee in her case. A scent dog is not really the same as a cadaver dog. They're trained differently. They're not looking for, you know, dead bodies and things like that, or cadavers. They're tracing a scent to see, like, if they walked off into the woods, you know, things like that. And, of course, no results on that. So those were, like, the initial searches right after everything happened. And that's kind of the entire summary of everything that happened that week and the extent of what we know. Now, there were searches over the years. My mom and my family and some community members and search teams put together a pretty big search in 2008 of different areas around Springfield and Cross Plains, like different places, like down by the creek that, you know, young people would hang out back behind the gas station. He says he dropped them off at, you know, places like that that they called dump sites. That's what search teams call them. Where a body would be dumped or disposed of or whatever. So we did that. We were part of that. No results from that. We've never been able to search the 6 acres that 1 acre is the residence that they lived in at the time, that little brick house. But at the time of the girl's disappearance, Joey's mom and dad were starting to build it's a huge log cabin right next door on 5 acres to that house they lived in at the time. So at the time, they were pouring foundation, digging for septic, installing septic lines and septic systems, and that's how far they were in the process at the time. So that is also a big theory in our case. They had dug septic lines and started all of this without permits. And without any of the stuff that they were supposed to be doing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If. Only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
So that comes up quite a bit with, like, the foundation of the new house and any concrete pads. And currently, there are 2 septic systems on that property. I have the old reports, and anyone can get access to them. They're electronic. But I spoke to the person who came and issued them their citation or whatever it is for not pulling the correct permits. But the original septic lines and septic system that was dug and installed is not used. And there was another septic system put in, and the original one, there's concrete poured over in a building that was built. And so there's things like that. That's like, you know, we've never been able to search or look into. We've never gotten a search warrant that we've so desperately needed. You know, when you ask the general public, and quite frankly, in other cases, like if someone was last seen at a certain place, you know, law enforcement is able to get search warrants, but there's no physical evidence, if you will, in our case. There's no smoking gun. There's no weapon. There's no blood. None of their belongings, you know, that will return to us anyway, have any evidence. I know that my mom turned something in that has been cataloged for law enforcement that possibly had some blood on it. But, you know, there were a lot of their belongings that were not returned to us that we don't know where they are. Like the baby's car seat and the diaper bag, my sister's wallet, her eyeglasses, her jewelry, things like that that she would be wearing at the time, you know, like that just put up big red flags that, that we need that warrant for. We've never been able to get. And then I know law enforcement has done, you know, they've let us know anyway. We can't see any documents from these searches, but they've done additional searches in the past. I know that they've drained a small pond, a very shallow small pond. I know that they did that. I know that they did kind of like a grid search with other like surrounding law enforcement, like Tennessee Highway Patrol. They were involved because Clarkson County is kind of like a smaller law enforcement agency. So they needed other resources. So they brought out like manpower and resources like dogs and things. And they did a grid search on some land, but I don't know what areas were searched. And the whole Benton family, like Joe's brothers and sisters and their children and Joey's grandparents, they all live like right there on that road. Kind of, I don't want to call it a commune because it's not like one road back there with a lot of houses, but like they're all neighbors. And so there's over 60 acres of property, if not more, to search, and we weren't able to. Okay, so in 2021, my family was invited by members of the Benton family. Joey's grandparents were getting older. His grandmother actually had already passed away, and so just his grandfather lived in this house and was being taken care of by one of his cousins. And they reached out to me. The grandfather wanted to give us permission to search his property, which is the bulk of the Benton property. And, of course, I jumped on that, and we set up a search. We had a search team go out there. There were, you know, multiple dogs and dog handlers. We invited law enforcement to come out there, but they declined. So it was just my family and a private search. And we had a permission form and everything signed by Grandfather Benton. And so he allowed us to come out and search. And our teams were out there in the woods. And Joe Benton, Joey's dad, came out into the woods, confronted the searchers, telling them they needed to get off the land, get off the property, interfering with the search. We had to pull our team out. Joey showed up to his grandfather's house that day, trying to interfere, saying we didn't have permission and whatnot. And then at that time, law enforcement came because the Benton family called into the sheriff's department and into dispatch and said, you know, that we were there and didn't have permission and everything. So they came out. And so our detective, who's been on the case for years and years and years, come out that day, spoke with Joey, you know, just said, you know, they have permission to be here. Like, don't know what you want me to do. Unless he wants them to leave, which he's not asking, and he didn't. And we completed the search, and there was a spot back in the woods that our dogs hit on human remains back behind the grandparents' house, kind of far into the woods. And, of course, my family's freaking out at that time. We let law enforcement know, and they're like, dig it up. And we're like, what? We're like, but what if we dig up something, like we don't want to interfere with a case or anything? And they're like, this is not a warranted search. We can't participate. They said, dig it up. So at this point, we're like, okay, we need to ask someone with ground penetrating radar equipment to come out. And so we did. And they come out there. The guy does his report. And this thing is not like a lawnmower that you just like push over land, and it goes really fast. It's very slow, methodical equipment. So it takes some time. He gets a report back to us, and he's like, I recommend you dig. And he's like, there's a spot down here. We need to dig it up. So we do. And there's nothing. Our private investigator took a backhoe out there and dug it up, which probably wasn't the most graceful way to do it. And my family believes, that they potentially could have been in that spot at one time. So either Jennifer and Adriana were, or someone else maybe, I don't know. But, I mean, we have videos of the dogs indicating and hitting on, like, different dogs hitting in the same spot over and over. And so we dug it up. There was nothing there. Now, could there potentially have been bone fragments? Could there have been teeth? Could there have been anything? I think so. But there was no actual forensic work done at that time. And that was in 2021. From that moment, I just kind of picked up the case and started, going through everything. I asked my mom for everything. I was like, give me every file, every notebook, every journal, every piece of paper, envelope, post-it note that you wrote on, all of the photos, just everything. And so I took it and I just started pouring over everything and just kind of went so deep into it. I started interviewing everyone from the beginning that I could get to talk to me. I mean, I went a couple hours from here, spoke to someone in prison. I got to speak to people who haven't spoken to my family ever. That's also the time I got Adriana's medical records. Just a lot went on in the last couple of years from the time of that search to now. And Grandfather Benton has since passed away. The land has been divided. And Joe Benton, Joey's dad, got the land that specific area was on during their estate division and all of that. So, unfortunately, we can't get back out there. Other family members, I'm sure, would welcome us back out. But there hasn't been another search to date. Of course, in the last couple of weeks, there have been a lot going on. I started getting calls on, I was preparing for their 20-year anniversary on social media and, like, putting things out. And I just wanted to do something memorable and honorable for them. So I was raising money for a mural to be painted for them, which I'm still doing, and is set to start in June to be painted. So I was doing that, and I was, like, gathering all of these things to start posting on social media and, like, just kind of get their story out there again for their 20-year, do something big for them. Nothing quite felt big enough, though, for 20 years of them being gone, I can tell you that. But in the middle of me making all of my posts and everything, 20 years later, to the day that we reported them missing, I start getting messages, phone calls, Facebook messages, Instagram messages of people that live in the Owens Chapel community in Springfield where the Benton home is. And they were telling me, like, something's going down over there. I don't know what, but there's, like, an insane amount of cars over there. And there were. There were the Sheriff's Department cars. There were TBI there. There was ATF was there, the bomb people, unmarked cars. State troopers, so many, SWAT team was there. So everyone's sending me these videos, and I have no idea what's going on. I haven't heard anything. And I stay in regular contact with our detectives on the case, our TBI agent and our newest Robert County Sheriff's Detective. I've heard nothing from them, but something's going on, and I don't know what. So then, of course, everyone starts talking, and I start hearing, they're finding explosives on their property. I hear that they've got a warrant to search, and they're finding things. I don't know what they're there for, what the warrant is for, but they're finding these bombs and explosive materials and things like that. It's unsafe. And our detectives call And they're like, hey, can you take a call? Are you with your mom? And I'm like, no, but we can get her on three-way call. So they call together, TBI and Sheriff's Department, and they get my mom and I on the phone. And they're like, yes, we have a warrant. And no, the warrant not related to Jennifer and Adriana. So before you get your hopes up, just want to let you know that. And we're like, of course, I remember begging them basically on the phone that day, like, please do everything in your power to have this end up giving us what we need, our warrant. Look for Jennifer and Adriana while you're there. And, I mean, they're very invested, but they're also by the book, and they follow the rules. They don't tell us things they can't tell us. And he just says to me, we're going to do everything within the scope of our search warrant. And it does cover that property. You know, but search warrants are very specific. They're, you know, they have a time frame, a time limit. They have what you can and cannot search, where you can and cannot go. So I don't know all the details of the search warrant. I know typically, I think after like 10 or 14 days or something, you can request it. No one is able to get their hands on that. It's been locked by the judge, as well as any court documents and things like that, because he's had hearings since then. So one of the news stations gets a call. I think it was on the 4th. I think it was on April 4th. One of the news stations gets a call from one of their sources at Robeson County. They're able to get their hands on one of the court documents. And they put out on the news media station that there's been an old photograph that's been found, a 20-year-old photograph. And he, Joe Benton, is being charged with sexual exploitation of a minor. And, of course, at that time, everyone just freaks out. My whole family is like, oh, my God. Like, what if it's Adriana? What if what we thought could have been happening was actually happening, and we just don't know? And we have no confirmation from law enforcement. As far as we know, you know, at this point, nothing's connected to us. And we're hearing it from the news station. And I did have someone go that day to his court hearing, so I knew about the sexual exploitation of a minor charge. We didn't know if it was related to Jennifer and Adriana at all, and then the news puts that out about the photograph, and now we're just waiting. And that's all we've been doing for 20 years. And, you know, I tell our detectives and our TBI agent, I'm like, we've been waiting for 20 years. Like, another couple days isn't going to hurt, but these have been the longest days that I can possibly describe to you. And we're just still waiting. Like, before this phone call earlier today, I reached out to them and asked them for an update. I haven't heard anything. And, you know, I'm trying to give them grace. I know these people, these detectives, our TBI agent, I mean, I know he's not even assigned specific cases, but just me making that relationship over the last couple years and kind of deepening that relationship and asking him to look into things and have you looked into this and have you looked into this and talking to all these people I've never talked to before. Like, I know he's invested in it. I know he cares. And the same with our Robeson County Sheriff detectives. We had a new one a couple years ago that was assigned the case because the previous one was promoted to, he's now major over the detectives. And so he still has a hand on our case after all these years. And I know he wants to see it solved. I know he cares about my family and Jennifer and Adriana. I know he's worked very hard. And then the new detective, I had a very good relationship with him on a texting basis. And he would listen to me for hours and hours talk about our case. And I know he's invested. And our new detective, like, I heard how exhausted he was on the phone the other day. I heard him say, I haven't slept. I know that they want to help us so bad, and I don't know if what they're working on right now is in relation to our case or not, but I hope and I pray that it is. And I try to give them the space and the grace that they need to do their jobs and to bring justice to our family. And I guess I'll just finish this little rant with just saying, like, my family, although we want justice for Jennifer and Adriana and we want to bring justice to whoever's responsible, if it's the Denton family or not. I and my family, the only thing that we want is to find Jennifer and Adriana. And if that means that, one day there's a new, you know, subdivision development going in and someone finds them when they're digging, if that means that someone finds them on a riverbank or a creek or whatever, and we never know what happened to Jennifer and Adriana. We don't know the exact details. That'll be just fine for us. It's just the finding them part, the cease of panic, and just finally being able to rest knowing that we found them and that we're not just hoping that they walk through the door again one day. Because that crosses our mind from time to time, even though we've lost hope over the years, especially after 20 years. In the beginning, I know my mom really thought, you know, she could come back. Maybe she's running from them. Maybe she's scared of them. Maybe she found out something that she shouldn't know. And, you know, I know that hope has dwindled over the years. And then there's been a little bit of hope that maybe if something happened to Adriana or happened to Jennifer, that whoever did it couldn't do it to Adriana. They just couldn't. Maybe they, you know, sold her, human trafficking. Maybe they illegally adopted her, gave her to someone, whatever. That's kind of been a hope in the back of her mind for years. And my personal opinion is that there are awful people in the news every day. There are hundreds and thousands of missing persons cases and murders. You know, I'm sure you've covered some of their cases where people have done awful things to children. And as much as I don't want to believe that she's gone, I just think that if anyone could do anything to my sister, they could do it to Adriana too. And I just personally believe, and I speak for my other sister and my mom too, we believe that they're no longer here and that we can't ever let go of that like small shred of hope. But that's what we believe. And we believe that it is highly likely anyways that one of the three that lived in the home with Jennifer and Adriana at the time are responsible for their disappearance, because my sister would not run away. She would not leave us, and she would not leave me. And she was super highly dependent, having no job, having no car, having no money. I mean, my mom, she smoked cigarettes. My mom would give her money for a pack of cigarettes, like once a week. My mom would watch the baby for her if she wanted to, you know, have some alone time or go on a date or whatever. Jennifer would talk to all of our family members almost every single day. Like, that is not what happened, and I cannot stress that enough. And, you know, people said that for years. You're like, oh, she'll be back. Oh, she just ran off with someone. Like, she did not do that. And that is not what happened. And all the details of our case and just knowing my sister so well and the behaviors of the Benton family and how they have interfered at every possible turn of our search for Jennifer and Adriana just proves that. And it's all circumstantial. We don't have that physical yet, but I'm hoping that we get it one day. And, you know, we just want to bring them home.
If you possess any valuable information regarding this case, please note that a reward of $25,000 is available for anyone who has any leads. To share these leads, please get in touch with the Robertson County Sheriff's Department at 615-384-7981. You can also show your unwavering support by following Justice for Jennifer and Adriana Wicks on social media platforms such as Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram, which I've linked in the show notes. Additionally, there's a GoFundMe page set up to aid the investigation that you can contribute to. Lastly, to demonstrate your support for the search of the Benton property, you can sign the petition, which is also linked in the notes. If you enjoy this podcast, consider supporting it on Patreon for $5 a month, where you get ad and sponsor-free episodes, or make a one-time contribution through Buy Me a Coffee. If you don't want to spend any money, you can also leave a 5-star review where you're listening right now. Thanks for listening to the Missing and Unexplained podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's body care breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.